I am apartheid native, and I learned from a very early age being the subject of crime stories in the Baltimore Sun in this city that, you know, if you want to shed the brightest light in the harshest mirror to the society, you follow the kids. And I employed that very much so in my career as an education reporter at the Baltimore Sun. And it is what led me to Polytechnic Institute, Poly, in 2014. And, you know, when I got to the Sun, I just wanted to do a good job. I didn't want to be great. I didn't want to be fancy and break stories. I just wanted to do a good job. And one of the best I did was to follow a group of students at Poly who had investigated the most boring shit ever. It was GPAs. And I was like, I'm going to do a story about GPAs, of all of the things you can do in the Baltimore City school system. That is what I wanted to investigate, but they had investigated it. And, you know, I followed the kids from a school board meeting to their classroom, where they presented to me just a systematic injustice, where they had just, you know, earned a fraction of a point for GPAs that they were taking, or for classes that they were taking in GT honors, where in the state of Maryland, students around the state had earned, you know, fractions of a point higher for taking these courses. So I thought I had, like, the best story ever. I was like, let's get it. This is an injustice. This is terrible. The kids have brought this to light. I get it. Okay. You got it? All right. And so, you know, I went to interview them. I put my all into it. You know, I'm sitting in the classroom. This big, broad man walks in, and he also wants to testify. He wants to be in the Sun to talk about how this system had, you know, disenfranchised students for years. He had graduated, but he also wanted to speak out about how this, you know, this very benign, unbeknownst, no one knew that this system was in place. No one knew that Baltimore City was awarding fractions of a point for a GPA, for GT, and honors classes to their city students. That was putting them at a huge competitive disadvantage compared to the rest of their peers in the state, who were able to go to colleges and have 4.5 GPAs. And he knew it wouldn't work for him, but he wanted to speak out on behalf of everyone else. And I was like, let's get it. Greg Butler, he missed out on going to college because of this system. He knew it wouldn't help him, but it would help others. And they took it all the way to the school board, and I watched them. I followed them. I sat with them as they presented this to the school board to let them know what was going on and that it needed to change. I followed the kids. And to the Sun's credit, they put it on the front page. It was important. The next time I followed the kids was April 27th of 2015. I started my day, the day that Freddie Gray was buried, at Gilmore Elementary School, where he had attended school. And that was my duty as an education reporter. All of the politicians were there for all of the pomp and circumstances. They said they wanted to hear from the kids, and they did. It was a lovely sight. They were in their Sunday best, their funeral best. And they answered questions. Why did this happen to Freddie? What are you going to do? And everyone gave their answers as they then paraded to the funeral. I went back to the Sun. I wrote my story. I talked about the fact that the kids had their say that day. And I thought, sillily, that I was done. I had done my duty. That afternoon, I learned that Frederick Douglass students were walking out. There was the purge. And I thought it was going to be fun. We had such great reporters out on the streets that day. I was an education reporter. I didn't know if my place was out at Mondawmin. And I got a call from, I'm not going to redact it, at the police department who said, "Erica, they're doing this." And I knew I had to move because I needed to follow the kids. And that's what I did. And I went to Mondawmin, and it was a seminal haze, and it was surreal to be in the fire of bricks and mortar and pain. But what I will tell you is that in that moment, police line here, the kids are here. When the kids moved, I moved with them. When the police moved, I did not. I always, always follow the kids. And we all documented that day. It was painful. Again, it was surreal. But it was extremely telling. I'm extremely proud. I'm expediting this because I'm last and I want to be quick so everyone can get out of here. But I moved from one side to the other, but always with the kids at the Battle of Mondawmin. And I was extremely proud of what we did at the Sun as a team. And, I didn't quite process it until the next day when I sat on my own stoop and lit a cigarette, like, what the fuck just happened? Ooh, are there kids here? Is it almost here? No, okay, great. I got a call. So many educators who knew I was out in the streets called to make sure that I was okay. I got a call from a teacher at Poly, Sam Brand, a brilliant math teacher who also coached basketball. It was 11 o'clock at night. The Sun had published his story, and on the front of it was an iconic image, as you all may remember, of a young man with his fists in the air with a gas mask. And he asked how I was doing. I said I was all right. I had just had a baby, so he was a little concerned. And he said, "Okay, Erica, I have something to tell you. I saw the front page," and I was like, "Yeah, it was wild, right?" And he was like, "Yeah, did you see the picture of the kid in the gas mask?" And I said, "Yeah, it was wild, right?" And he's like, "Yeah, that was Greg Butler." And so I finished that cigarette so quick. And as we all know, had it not been for the systemic inequities that were built into a system that were perpetuated by the folks in charge, Greg Butler would never have been at Penn North in a gas mask. His story continued to be told. I was so blessed to be a part of doing that. I was not the only one. There are other journalists, including in this room, who helped tell this story. Hey, Mary. And I just want to say, you just kind of never know. You never know when you're embarking upon the first draft of history. I feel like as journalists, we have all of these mottos and mantras that we abide by. But sometimes you just follow your instinct to do what's right, even if it seems like the most boring shit ever. Like GPAs. And, you start stories not knowing how they will end. And sometimes you just sit back in the most historic and monumental and poignant and prescient of moments and realize that you are a part of something that was bigger than yourself. And I personally think that that is what the lives of kings are, my friends.